All right, what's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Rebunked. My name is Scott, coming at you live from Nashville, Tennessee, and I got a fantastic episode for you guys tonight. Well, it's doing that stupid thing where it's telling me the Rumble stream isn't working again. Oh, no, Rockfin is not working this time. What the heck is up with that? That's really weird. Okay, well, Rumble's going this time. So last time it was Rumble not working, and this time it's Rockfin that's not working. So I'll have to figure that out later. Anyway, you guys, I got a great show for you guys tonight. Solution-focused episode. Just going to get into it with some friends from the Bear community that reached out, and I'm very, very excited about it. But real quick, I just want to tell you guys how you can follow and support the show. So if you head over, so first call to action will be go ahead and subscribe over on the Substack. So that's rebunk.substack.com. The Substack is basically my email list. It's basically the best way to stay up to date with the show. Anytime there's a, you know, I'll put out an announcement anytime I'm about to go live later in the day. And just a great way to keep up to date with everything. And then there's also, if you guys feel so inclined, as this is a value for value show, if you get any value out of the show and you want to return that value, you can become a $5 a month subscriber. That really helps. I appreciate those of you that are subscribers. And if anybody would like to jump on that, that really helps me out quite a bit. As you can see here, there's a little QR code. If any of you Bitcoin millionaires, newly minted Bitcoin millionaires out there, if you guys feel generous and get any value out of the show, if you guys want to shoot a little coin in your boy's wallet here, that would be very much appreciated. And surprisingly, I did have somebody donate last week, and I'm like super honored and flattered. Whoever you are, thank you so much. And so I figured I'd throw that out there. Of course, the main website is rebunk.news. This is how you get up to date with everything. Basically, it's just a landing page. You'll see some affiliates at the top there, including Richard Grove's autonomy course, TRS Heavy Metal Detox, which is fantastic. You guys should definitely look into that. Like if you have kids that have like, you know, vaccine injuries, any sort of like heavy metal cleanse that you're interested in, like TRS is definitely part of that protocol. And then the Give, Send, Go, which is, again, just a tip jar. Other value for value donation options, all the social media, basically I'm at Rebunk News everywhere you go. And then please go subscribe on your video and audio podcast platforms. Finally, I just want to tell you guys about the shirt shop. So again, you can find a link to the shirt shop right there at the top, right there. Bam, rebunk.news/shirts. Got all kinds of designs. You have just the design for the show itself. You got everybody's favorite, the Beavis. Are you threatening me? Gadsden flag shirt, and $16 for a shirt, you guys, like you can't go wrong, dude. You cannot go wrong with a $16 shirt. When you comply, you die. Let's look at all these designs here real quick. We got some, just some funky, like, you know, the never ending, what is this? The never ending PSYOP with the Klaus Schwabs and the George Soroses. So if you want to have fun with something like that, of course you can. We've got the Fauci gave us all AIDS. Fauci gave the entire world AIDS. And then he did it again. So he's given the entire, like, you know, back in the 80s, the proliferation of the AIDS situation was under Fauci. And then with the mRNA injections, with the vaccine acquired immune deficiency syndrome, right? So Fauci gave us all AIDS twice. Can you believe it? This is a great one. I was wearing this on the Unjected show last night. Those of you that caught that one, got any new conspiracy theories? All my old ones came true. You know what I'm saying? $16. For a freaking t-shirt, you can't beat that anywhere. And of course, $30 for a sweatshirt. You can't get a $30 sweatshirt anywhere in the universe except here at the rebunk.news/shirts store. Compliance is violence, using their rhetoric against them. That's always a fun way to get inside their head. Lady shirts, hats, beanies, and stickers. So rebunk.news/shirts goes a long way to support this show. And Big Frog t-shirts. Shout out to Ryan and Amanda and the team over there. They are a liberty-minded t-shirt shop in Beaverton, Oregon. And so, couldn't do it without them. So thank you guys, and thanks to everybody here. And sweet. So without further ado, let's bring my guests in. So we have Jeff and Daria from findingpolaris.org. You guys, how you guys doing?
Good. Yourself?
I'm doing really good. Thank you guys for hopping on. This is good stuff. Right. So, I mean, what can I say? Like, so I want to encourage everybody, findingpolaris.org. go check out what they got going on, a lot of the offers that they have, because what you guys are doing is like so like mind-blowingly awesome. Like, you guys have like are living it. You guys are living the deal. Like, you're out in nature, you're teaching, you're educating, you're building community. Like, that's awesome. I can't even tell you how grateful I am to know that you guys are out there doing this. So I guess let's just start from the very beginning. Like, tell me a little bit about your guys. What's your backgrounds and how you got into, how would you characterize this? Like, an outdoor school, community, wilderness, retreat? Like, what would be the best way to characterize what you guys have to offer?
You want to start before your voice wears out?
Yeah, I mean, definitely a little bit of everything. And we're still trying to find our way and put words to what we're offering, because it is different. Like, we're not just a skills or experience based, organization. We do offer like life way practices. So it's not just, hey, come and learn friction fire and go home and eat shitty food and drink tap water. It's, hey, let's learn friction fire so we can have more skills, be more resilient in all aspects of our life. And that friction fire is truly just one part of this, this entire way of being as we work through this path of becoming more sovereign. So we love teaching harder skills. We teach, softer skills. Some people would say community building is more of a softer skill. But yeah, just a little bit of everything.
Amazing.
My voice is really bad.
Yeah. I'll play Daria for a bit.
Perfect.
So she started this nonprofit about 4 years ago now.
Okay.
And she had did university. She actually hiked the PCT through the States from Mexico to Canada. Yep. I guess she became kind of disillusioned with her environmental science degree and kind of the, she did what I think a lot of us do is we were passionate about something and you try to follow a career with it. And it turns out that it's not as advertised, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
So then she kind of got called to being more involved with nature and being in maybe not cooperation, but being actually part of it and not just an onlooker or, like you're 9 to 5 and you get out. And so she visited a bunch of wilderness schools in the States, actually.
Mm. You might know Wilderness Awareness School in Washington.
Possibly. Have you guys connected with Wild Med Bear yet?
No.
Okay. You guys got to get connected with Wild Med Bear. He's up in Montana. He does like outdoor survival training, stuff like that. Like, actually takes people out in the thick of it. Like, dude, well, I've had him on the show. So if you go back, I can't remember. I can figure out what episode it was, but dude, Patrick is his name, but yeah, he's doing the deal for real. I feel like you guys could have a lot of overlap and just come together and see what we can come up with type of thing. So yeah.
Yeah, totally. So Daria did a few different wilderness programs, and I guess the culminating one for her was a teaching drum outdoor school, where she spent 2 months outside with a group of 10 people, and they lived in a wigwam with only natural clothing, which is only natural fibers, and then one bowl, one spoon, one cup. And then, she tells stories about bringing in roadkill would be like what they would have to butcher and eat. And if you lost your spoon or your bowl, you were screwed. So it was a real like survival situation, but long-term. So it wasn't just like, let's make do for a weekend. It was like, okay, like you got to actually have to live it long-term. And then I guess after that, what about a year or two after that? Was it?
Yeah, and then I finally returned home back to Northern Ontario because I had traveled for a few years. And then I decided, hey, there's not a lot of opportunities like this. As you heard in the story from Jeff, that I traveled to the U.S. to get these experiences, and there's less of this in Canada. And so I was like, hey, I'm going to start my own version, and definitely is different than other schools. I think Jeff and I are realizing that we love the rites of passage work.
Yeah.
Where you bring people to their edge, because that's kind of how we are, just ourselves. And so it's easy for us to hold that container for other people, because if people stay comfortable, there's actually no growth. And you know, we still are in our own life, we get rites of passage. We just went through one with our, like, the birth of our daughter was definitely a rite of passage for both of us. And yeah, the amount of growth that we got through that experience. And so we want to create these containers and with nature. So it's a rite of passage in nature. We teach skills, we bring people together, and it's fun. Honestly, I love doing it.
Awesome. Okay. I love all this, man. I'm super stoked about this. So tell me, what do you think is the problem in society when it comes to rites of passage? Like, what do you think is lacking in that regard?
So I have to take over for a lot of her talking because her voice is messed up. She's been detoxing the last 2 weeks.
That's good.
Something that we talk about a lot is either we don't have a rite of passage, mm-hmm. or they've been co-opted, or
they're based on sin. They're all based on sin.
Yeah, so I was going to say, humans, I think we naturally, it's almost like you put a dog in a house, or you put a mouse in a little cage thing. Like, no matter what you give it, they're going to, like, so if a mouse is under your hood, it's going to start taking, like, the insulation from the top of the hood, and it's going to start pulling wiring apart, and it's going to make its little nest, even though nothing around it resembles the natural environment. And I think that's what humans do. So we are naturally going to, like, conform to our environment. And then, so like you said, so our original, I guess, rites of passage, let's say they've been removed, and mm-hmm. some have been co-opted, and then others have been created or substituted. So, like, something that we like to mention all the time is, like, so I guess where you guys are, 21 is a drinking age for most states, correct?
Yeah.
So Canada, it's 19.
Oh,
so,
wow. You know,
17, 18, you're starting to drink, or you can get a fake ID or whatever. So that's a rite of passage. Mm-hmm. You have high school, you have college. These are pseudo rites of passage.
Sure.
Buying a home, buying a car, having a family. Like, not to say they're not rites of passage, but what happens is it's not standardized or facilitated in a way that is going to pass on the learning and growth that's going to sustain a people's for generations. So the rite of passage you have, getting drunk for the first time as a teenager, it's hard to pass it on to your child and be like, I hope you have as good time as I did, because it was amazing. And then they, like, oh, I ended up in the ditch hit by a car or something, you know, like, you can't form that into something that passes on for generations, but you can create generational trauma with it. So I think what's happened is we've either commandeered them or co-opted them. So, like, buying a car or getting your license, not to say it's not a rite of passage, but it's almost like a fill-in. So where we would naturally have this, through all of humanity, all peoples, all cultures had these events, but now it's like, oh, okay, we're going to take away, like, you know, you're a young man, let's say yourself, I can, you know, relate more to that than a young woman, but, like, you know, you're ready to just, you know, take over the world. You're ready to, like, uproot the system, create change. And they're like, hey, here's your driver's license. It kind of just steers you away from, mm-hmm. you know, like, stepping into that man path. And then it's like, hey, you can go to college, and it's like, we're going to tell you what to think and what to do. And it, like, pulls you more away from that, like, warrior that you're about to evolve into. And then they're kind of taming that beast. So we have these things that are put into place that we consider rites of passage in our culture, but they're not doing what Indigenous or First Nations, we call them in Canada, or any of these tribal cultural people around the world, it's not doing what they meant for it to do, or, like, you know, what our ancestors passed on. You know, like, if you grew up on a farm, there's probably way more rites of passage on a farm than there you would have if you lived in the city.
Or, absolutely,
like, I had growing up, and we're not even in a large city.
Yeah, and just being connected to nature in general, like being in the city, like your analogy of the mouse in the vehicle. It's like, yeah, we still interact with our environment, but it's like, which environment are we interacting with? Right. And it's, so it's like, you get so much more as humans, so much like so much of city life. And I live in Nashville, like literally like in a pretty big city, which granted, as far as big cities go, like it's pretty cool. Like, I don't know, man, I can't wait to get out in the country. Like, I'm no excuses. I can't wait to get my own little homestead out in the country. But like, you know, I haven't had any issues with Nashville yet. Traffic sucks, but you know what I mean? I'm making excuses over here, but at the same time, it's like, you know, when we surround ourselves with nature, we build our lives around that. Like, that's where we're meant to be. That's literally where we're meant to be. Like, it's sad that we've moved so far past that. But anyway.
Well, and I think a lot of us are trying to play catch up, because from my teachings of this work is, by the time that someone is about 16 to 18, you would have all your survival skills would be honed in and perfected. So you wouldn't be learning, you know, how to make cordage or learning wild food or friction fire or how to, you know, filter dirty water. You would have all that by the time you were 16 or 18. And then you would go on to your vision quest so that you could no longer be a child, and you would step into the role of being of service as an adult. But without these rites of passage, or we have these pseudo ones that don't do the same thing, everyone or lots of people, or we live in a culture that there's a lot of like children in some ways, you know, we don't have a lot of people going into their full embodiment of what it is to be an adult. And then, yeah, it just kind of creates some problems from there.
That's amazing. That's amazing. So you guys are offering this now. You're trying to help allow people the experience to then go in and whether it's later in life, or I'm sure you work with like families, maybe like teenagers that are like kind of in that realm. But like, just looking at your site here, so you have your in-person transformative experience programs. Like, you actually have you guys guide a vision quest. Like, tell me about this. This is amazing.
Yeah. So, we've kind of been perfecting this over the last couple of years. So Daria did her own facilitated vision quest a few years ago in Canada, mm-hmm. on the West Coast. And then she's been facilitating them for, she did a few years for friends, and then the last couple years through our programs. And then last year we kind of developed, I guess, a more formal, like something we could work with. So this year we're running a 9-day vision quest. And so you're taking the 9 days, and we break it into 3 pieces. What are the?
So the first 3 days is what we call the severance, where you're separating from the life that you came from. Threshold is your quest, where you're fasting from food and water, you're solo 3 days, 3 nights. And then the last 3 days is incorporation, where we welcome you back. You incorporate and embody the teachings and kind of work through them before then going back home after the 3 days at the end.
And then we facilitate this for us in our area. We go to a remote location, so there's no cell phone service, less likely to see people, you know, a more wild environment rather than, you know, just in the neighborhood green space. We try to make it, put a little, so you have skin in the game, you know, you're in the wild, you're not, you know, you're not a hop, skip and a jump, or like a scream away mm-hmm. from a bunch of people.
Yeah, man, that's so awesome. Like, that's Pacific Northwest guy here. Like, one of my favorite things to do, a thick, you know, evergreen forest out there, and it's just like one of my favorite things is there was a bunch of like logging areas, especially the last few years. I kind of lived out in the country, like it was like a 20-minute drive from town, and they had all these like logging roads and all these like there's no trails, it's just thick woods, you know what I mean? And so like some of my favorite hikes would be just going by myself. Like, my buddy and I would do this a lot, but like, just grab a backpack. A lot of times I just go by myself, get a backpack, some supplies, park the car somewhere on the logging trail, and then just head in, just go in. And like, that is like one of the best workouts ever, because you're constantly just like climbing over things and climbing under things, and just like it's intense. And you come across areas that's like, wow, this place probably hasn't been seen for like a couple hundred years, you know what I mean? Like, all these magical little spots, it's like, whoa. Like, so it's definitely one of my favorite things to do. And and my buddy and I would look for like spots on like Google Maps, like a little body of water, like way off the beaten path, like in the middle of nowhere, and we try and hike in and find it, and you know, stuff like that. Like, man, so just getting out away from like the city parks and stuff like that. Like that, you know, it's fun going on like a day hike or whatever, but man, yeah, when you get out in it, into it, that's where the magic happens. So I probably should have, before doing something like that, I probably should have taken one of your overnight survivalist skill courses though. So tell me a little bit about that though. That sounds amazing.
So those we have put on weekends for, you know, because I was similar to you, Scott. I was the weekend warrior. So before I met Daria, it was kind of like, here's my 2 days off or 3 days off. And a lot of times I do almost the exact same thing. I would just drive down an old logging road. I just like, this is a good spot. I'll park here and then just like go with the intention of getting lost or just like, oh, like that looks like the high ground. I'll go toward that.
Yep.
Or like, oh, I'll follow this body of water. Like, oh, there's supposed to be a lake or some rapids here. I'll go check that out. And I would do a lot of that. So our survivalist overnight, it kind of encompasses a bit of everything because we do a lot of day stuff and it can be a lot of show and tell. And it's very surface level. And, you know, a lot of, a really popular thing the last couple of years has been plant identification. People want to know, like, what can I forage? Well, what can I eat? What can I use as medicine out there? And then they want to come on a walk and it's like, they're kind of expecting you to just like walk and like this and this and this and name like 300 different things. But no one's going to remember, like, they're not going to put that, store that anywhere. Like, there's just too many green things for them to point anything out. So the overnight kind of encompasses the friction fire. We do the foraging. We'll show some hard skills. We might, like, you know, you might carve spoons or make shelter. Or we'll go over
water filtration.
We'll go over more hard survival skills mixed in the whole time with like the softer skills. Like it might be like, okay, we're gonna get up and we're gonna do a little movement practice and loosen our bodies, maybe some qigong, or, you know, let's get into a deep squat and let's talk about how you're gonna wipe your ass, because it's like such a taboo thing. We just did a free event last Saturday and a lot of people are excited, and where we are, the snow just melted but it's still cold.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're like, we could talk about all types of flashy stuff for the next 2 hours, but it's like, really, like, we're out here, how are you gonna wipe yourself? Like, how are you gonna clean your armpits? How are you gonna brush your teeth when you have nothing? And it's like the less sexy part that people don't think about, you know. It's like, you're gonna pee and poo a couple times a day, so let's focus on that, because that's more likely to happen first.
Sure.
If you're outside in the wild, then, you know, you're going to need to sharpen that spear and like make your deadfall trap and stuff. You know, like, you, if you're out there for a week, you're not going to starve to death.
Yeah.
Where you're going to have to go to the bathroom every day, hopefully a few times a day.
Hopefully you're getting enough nutrients to where you're going a few times a day. So what would be your best recommendation for wiping? Like, what's the secret here?
Well, it depends.
You are or where we are. That's
Well, of course. Yeah. Yeah, there's lots of leafy type stuff around here. I wouldn't be too concerned about, especially this time of year. Like, just pick up a handful of whatever's on the ground, you're good. Yeah.
Well, actually, when I hiked the PCT, I didn't use toilet paper the entire trail.
Wow.
So I learned a lot about what to wipe with.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
You know, when you're in, it's a sick, well, it took us 5.5 months and you're walking through various landscapes. So it changes, but my favorite wiping materials is snow. And then there, the second one is smooth river rocks.
Oh, wow. Genius. There you go. Perfect. 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 Okay. So here's a question. So I'm deathly allergic to poison oak. And I know there's poison ivy out here where I'm at, but not so, I mean, I know there's a little poison oak, but it's not as abundant as Oregon. Like, Oregon's poison oak everywhere. And I've had some serious situations in my life where like I was just ravaged. Like, I was like, the swelling lasted like a month and then the peeling lasted like a month. That was like it was the experiences of life, and it's happened to me twice. And so I'm like so deathly afraid of poison oak. Like, what are some tips or strategies you guys have around that? Like, first off, being able to identify it's important, obviously, but is there any other like, let's say I'm out there in the woods and I happen to come across some, or inadvertently find myself in a patch of some, or I get some on my skin or anything like that. Any advice for that?
So, well, I don't know poison oak very well. I remember avoiding it on trail.
Yeah, totally.
But I think what I would answer with is, rather than just like pointing to a plant, is asking you, or like when you see poison oak, oftentimes the remedy of the poisonous plant is going to be living and growing very close to it. Mm. So I would ask you to look and learn about the plants that are nearby, and potentially the medicine is actually right beside the poison oak. And to give an example, we have poison ivy like crazy here, especially on the island that we were living on. It was so abundant. And the medicine here is a plant called jewelweed, and they literally grow side by side.
Wow. That's amazing. Yeah. I mean, isn't that just beautiful? That just tells you everything you need to know right there. It's just like, like that's nature for you. Like everything is just right there in front of you. Never even thought of it in those terms, but I mean, it makes perfect sense. Just the yin and the yang of it. Right. I mean, it's just so beautiful. Interesting. Okay. Well, we'll have to do some research on that. That's genius. So improving your site and talking to you guys a little bit before the show, like, You talk about a term that I'd never even heard of. I mean, in my mind, it makes sense, but rewilding. Can you tell me, can you talk a little bit about that, like what that is and what that means to you guys?
Yeah. So I think I came across a term maybe like 10 years ago now, and it's gaining steam, I guess, it's interesting. There's a growing popularity of the pseudo nature hippie people, crystal people, kind of crossing into the nature realm. And so rewilding essentially is reconnecting us with nature, but not just in the best analogy I've heard from a mentor of mine is, if you see someone like, say, hiking the trail in Oregon or out in Nashville and they're leaving the city, you know, they're wearing a fluorescent like jumpsuit, and they got their hiking poles, their big backpack, like they got their bucket hat on, got their sunglasses. And he says, you know, like, these people look more like astronauts on a foreign planet than they look like humans or an animal interacting with nature. So it's like they have all the gear and all this stuff, and it's like, okay, great. And then it's the leave no trace, like don't no one should know you were there. It's like, well, that's not what animals do. Like, that's not truly how we're meant to live with nature. So rewilding is a concept of kind of rebridging that connection with nature and bringing humans back into, you know, I guess I would say like the web of life, or bringing humans back into being animals with nature and not just the visitors or consumers off the landscape where we just, you know, devour and leave. Like, you know, like maggots on the landscape. So the what I picture with rewilding is building your connection back with nature, and then slowly adding more and more nature back into where it's no longer you're just visiting. It's you're in communion, and on so many different levels of your life, you're interacting with nature in, you know, multitudes of ways. From, you know, I could just go off on like just inside your house, having plants, opening the window, getting a fresh breeze in.
Barefoot shoes.
Grounding. Yeah, grounding, swimming in the lakes and the streams, you know, like
primal movement patterns.
You know, maybe there's one berry that's like super popular in your area. And you go out every time when it's blooming and really popping off. And every year you're doing that. We start hunting. So like, just the idea of reconnecting yourself with nature and not just being that visitor.
Yeah, that sounds amazing, man. I just that resonates so deeply with me, man. Like, it's just like we are a part of nature. Like, it's just like just talking. I had a guest on Tuesday, and we were just talking about this whole idea of, like, you know, we in the city, like, we're kind of pulled into this deception of comfort and convenience and everything's just offered up to us on a silver platter, and there's no effort that needs to be made for anything. Like anything you could possibly need is just right there with very minimal effort. And it gives this illusion that this is like the ultimate pinnacle of what human evolution is. Like everything that's come before us has led us to this society of just complete comfort and just apathy, really. Like there's really not much that we need to be challenged with, you know, in terms of the things that really matter. Like over here, like the priorities of somebody living in a city is much different than the priorities of people living out in nature, for sure. And who maybe have a little bit more stake in the game in their own, you know, resource acquisitions, things like that. Right. So it's just a much different way of being, for sure. And I just, you know, maybe you guys could talk a little bit about this. And one of our emails you mentioned about like the idea of like when taking 100% responsibility for the life that you live and create. Right. And to me, that's kind of what I'm getting at. It's like, you know, we live in these, like I live in the city and I drive a vehicle and I can like literally live like right across the street from a grocery store. Like I just walk over there and like get whatever I need. You know what I mean? And it's like on one hand, it's convenient, but at the other hand, am I just setting myself up for something awful? Like I'm completely dependent on that grocery store, 100%. Like there's no aspect of my, like if that grocery store, if something were to happen to that, then I'd be totally screwed. You know what I mean? Now I have contingencies. I've got stuff, but I'm just saying, like an example, like I would say I'm prepared, more prepared than 99% of the people out there. And I ain't prepared for shit, really. You know what I mean? Like, but it's like in the grand scheme of things. So what does that mean to you guys, taking 100% responsibility for your life and, you know, and for the life that you create and live?
I think this is a big piece that when me and Daria met during COVID it was like a non-negotiable type belief structure. And I think I would just step out of the nature scene, the our teachings or our niche right now. And this is a principle I like to live in my life, is being 100% responsible for everything. The bad things that happen to you, the good things. And I don't think need to be, you know, just like the example you used with the grocery store. Cause I think, you know, look what you're doing. You're spreading truth and you're bringing awareness to these topics that you might not be able to do. Cause we lived off grid in a bunkie. It was 100 square feet with, you know, two deep cell batteries. Could barely charge our phone. We could never live stream from there. We barely had any signal. And then Daria was running the nonprofit from there. And I'd always joke around saying, like, you know, it's the greatest business no one's ever heard of. So it's like your ability to affect change there, it gives purpose to that. You know, it's not just, you know, like you're not doing yourself any wrong by being in that place. But that being said, you know, in the city, there's so much going on there. Once you have the eyes to see, and like, urban foraging has taken off in the last 10 years, and a lot of people have been pioneering that, you know, like little green spaces where you might be able to find stuff. And even if it's not, maybe if you're like, tire and brake dust and car exhaust, I don't want to eat it. But even if it's just, that's how your plant ID journey starts, or even just bird language. If you're out there and you're listening to these birds in a small green space, you're like, oh, like, hey, there's that woodpecker, or where there's that little songbird, like what's the song it's singing. And these are all little pieces of awareness you're to pick up. But I think with 100% responsibility, it's, you're not making any excuses for anything.
And I would add, like, some fundamentals for us is health. So, you know, everything that I do in my life is contributing to the state of my health right now. And well, yeah, I clearly just went through something, and I do, like, I am taking, okay, what created this situation? And I'm learning from that. I'm not beating myself up and
or blaming someone else
for being in this state. And also, I'm not just running to the hospital when something happens out of fear or whatever. So it's like empowering myself, gaining my own medicines, having my own, you know, like toolkit or cabinet, so that, and resources, so that when something happens, I'm the one who's resourced to be present and to kind of heal and move through the cycle of whatever's happening. So like, you know, water, for example, drinking water, we're not just relying on the city to provide tap water and just trusting. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, every month we haul these massive carboys filled with spring water. People think we're crazy, but that's us taking responsibility for our health, our life, and what we believe in, and actually putting it into practice. And not, it's not just like airy fairy, like, yeah, it's like, no, we work towards this on a day-to-day, like on a day-to-day basis. And then even with the pregnancy and the birth, it was like, yeah, here's another way that I'm not just going to go to the hospital and let someone hero me. And the midwifery system in Canada is pretty much the same thing at this point. And yeah, it was an incredible experience, but it was another way that solidified like, hey, no, I'm taking 100% responsibility for my life and my actions and my choices. And so this is the path I'm walking. Let's do it.
Oh my God. I love it. So how did you guys meet? I'm very curious.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. You say it.
So I came from more of a health nut background. I had childhood cancer when I was 2. So a lot of my journey when I woke up was on the health side of things. So I'm balls deep, for lack of a better term, into all that, the health conspiracy and health minded stuff. And I was going to a local health food store, and Daria had a hand-drawn logo of the nonprofit, and the I think the Instagram and the, like website and stuff was on there. So I went and checked it out, and I messaged her. At the time, I didn't know who or what it was, because it was kind of like the Instagram, hiding from the system type thing, like pictures with no face, or it was just pictures of berries or plants. So I was like, oh, okay. I kind of figured, like, my past experience with the health world was like, okay, it's probably some crusty old like vet or something teaching some wilderness skills. I'm like, this would be cool. And like, I had just separated from a relationship during COVID. And then I was like, okay, cool. Like, I'd like to do like some wilderness programs. I'd been passionate about the rewilding topic, but never got any formal training. I was like, I'm gonna go outside and find some reishi mushrooms or chaga mushrooms. Like, oh, like I've heard about this plant and I'm gonna go hunt for it and usually never find it. But, and then, yeah, so I reached out to her, and then after a few months of back and forth, we finally connected and went on a few hikes, and then
that was it.
Bam. Well, I mean, it seems like you guys are so aligned, and like kind of the synergy of what you've created is just, it's amazing. You can just tell from a mile away, you guys were meant to kind of cross paths. Obviously. So was this your first child?
Yeah.
You guys, oh my gosh. That's so good. Congratulations. Like, how old?
She's going to be 7 months in like 2 weeks.
Wow. That's amazing. You guys, that's so cool. That's pretty exciting. Like, what a gift, what a miracle. It's like, you guys are creating all kinds of amazing stuff. I was going to tell you this. So my good friend, Angela, she would, in Telegram, when I promoted this episode, shout out to Angela. She wrote, their website is amazing. I need that survival course. Looking forward to this discussion. So she's impressed with your guys' website. So great job. I'm impressed too. Like, it's just like, you guys are just like, what do you not offer? Like, it's so cool. So tell me a little bit. So like, let's say I live on the other side of the world and I want to take, like, I want to learn from you guys. Like, you guys have e-courses too. Like, tell us some of these and what people can get if they're not local to you.
Yeah. So we've been doing more of the marketing and media stuff, like reaching out to podcasts and trying to interview people ourselves, just so we can get more cool ideas out there. That's not just the Instagram snippet kind of very shallow stuff. You know, it's hard on social media these days to get out a message or an idea with, you know, these 1 minute, 2 minute videos. Yep. But we have 3 e-courses right now. We're working on building more of a catalog of courses that people can learn harder things you wouldn't assume you could learn online. For example, our Friction Fire e-course. So we break down creating a friction fire using a bow drill, and we go from, you know, we name all the pieces. We show you, you know, this is the idea of what we're trying to achieve with the bow drill. Here's what we're working towards. These are the different materials. If you were looking to build your own, if you don't have the same wood that we have in our area, in Northern Canada, like where you are in Nashville, we describe what in the materials that you're looking for.
Okay.
So you can find what works in your local environment. For example, you know, there's a combination of softwoods and hardwoods to build this friction fire kit. So if you know your local softwoods and hardwoods, you can say, oh, okay, cool. Like, I know this tree here is a softwood, and that'd be a great piece to add to my kit. And then we break down the technique. Once you actually get to the point of getting a coal, what steps you're going to need to do that, and like kind of where we've screwed up, which I think is a big piece. It's not just the like watch a survivalist person do this thing that you'll probably never be able to do. Because there's so much of that in our niche too. It's like the show and tell, but it's like, how about, this is how we failed. This is where most people screw up. So then if someone is like where you are and you're like, hey, cool. Like, you know, I might want to dip into this on the weekend. Be like, okay, like, you know, I got the idea. I got the concept. If I want to go out and find the materials, and then you're basically, it's, I guess you get more of a conceptual understanding and holistic view of it, that the actual like down dirty specifics matter less.
So similar to what, when you asked about the poison oak, it's like you want to understand like the relationship of the plants. That's almost more important than like the actual ID piece. So same mm-hmm. with friction fire, it's like I could tell you exactly what my kit's made out of, but it's kind of useless because to say if I'm in California and those trees aren't around me,
true.
Then how are you going to get, how are you going to make a kit? So we teach you the quality of what you're looking for in all the pieces from, you know, your bow, your board, to your tinder bundle, to all of that, so that wherever you are in the world, you can find what you need to make a bow drill kit. So that one we're teaching specifically bow drill. And then we have a rewilding, you know, we were just rewilding
cool.
fundamentals. So these are just, you know, basic principles. If you want to start your rewilding journey, it's super simple. These are like more lifeway concepts so that you can start integrating one like thing.
Little fundamental pieces, I think, that we kind of just touch on a lot of little subjects that you don't get a lot of detail from, you know, like a lot of people talk about barefoot walking. Well, we do like a 10-15 minute video on actual, like, this is how you get started barefoot walking. I started like 15 years ago, and you know, like the time from barefoot walking to barefoot sprinting was months.
Yeah. And yeah. I'm like, not very good at barefoot walking. I call it privileged feet. I have privileged feet because I don't, like I try to walk on gravel. I'm like,
But that's how it starts though. And that's
exactly. I'm a guitarist too. So I understand the concept of calluses. You got to build up the calluses. Yeah. You got to. Yeah. I get it. It's just, you know, I'm just a city boy with privileged feet.
So, you know. Well, it's like, I explain, like, you know, when you're out, you never commit. When you're barefoot walking,
like deer stepping.
Yeah, so you're kind of like, oh, is it safe? Okay, mm-hmm. Especially like where you were in Oregon, we have a lot of like coniferous forests here, and like mm-hmm. one wrong step, and it's like a fallen branch with some like dagger broken branch sticking up, or like just somehow an old pine needle just happens to be like the stiffest one on the planet, uh-huh. and it's just pointing straight up. So we break that down, concepts like getting out in the sun and not getting sunburnt without using sun lotion. Like that's a thing that we take for granted. A lot of people don't think about that. There's not only ways that you could promote getting sunburnt from what you're doing from, mm-hmm. it could be sunglasses. Actually wearing sunglasses messes up with some receptors in your eyes, and natural light will go in and it'll start the defense mechanisms for your skin, or it could be sun lotion that you've put on, or it could even be the food you're eating. If you're eating a lot of rancid oils, those oils are being pushed out to your skin. Now your skin's just ripe to be burnt and damaged because it's not the most nutritious, hearty it could be, where something like greens or red berries, like a goji berry or a raspberry, you actually have components that can protect your skin. So if you're, you know, you're looking to be out, say, picking berries all day, there's something to think about, like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have the cheese fries and beer the night before if I'm really cautious about putting my skin in the sun, especially where you are.
Yeah.
That's probably a bigger thing for you than it is for us on a day-to-day.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Well, I ditched the sunglasses like maybe about a year ago. I haven't had sunglasses. I don't do that game anymore. So, yeah, no, I know what you mean, man. All that's so fascinating, man. Okay, so and then your other one is water is life. So you're about just finding water. Tell us a little bit about that one.
Yeah, so I've been on a journey of drinking spring water for about 15 years now, and I learned that from a friend and mentor of mine. So we talk about why spring water, why not other types of water, and there's lots of great alternatives if you can't find spring water, but we try to focus on is locating spring water, knowing if it's good or not, if you're going to test it, those type of things, finding a source that maybe other people have been to, then kind of verify its quality, and bring in the idea of that water is more than just water, especially from something like a spring. Like some of these water sources could be, you know, predate all human industry. So when you have a water like that, and like something I like to tell people, like it percolates through the ground, it reaches its aquifer, and then somehow, because science can't explain this, it's drawn up to the surface.
Wow.
If you deforest somewhere, the spring disappears. So if you clear cut a forest, you might have a spring there and it's going to disappear back into the ground. So by some otherworldly forces that many esoteric scientists like Schauberger and others speak about, it's almost drawn up to the surface. So you can imagine the energies and the forces behind that water, things like hydrogen, it could be rich in that water. And that's like a really big thing right now in the health movement is hydrogen in your water, people selling tablets or machines to reinvigorate water with hydrogen. So there's all these things that come in spring water that aren't water, things that, you know, that are becoming more mainstream, I think, today, you know, energy or vibration, these type of things. And not only that, we just talked about this recently, was with a spring, there's no need to change the filter. Like you said, with the radical responsibility, it's if the grocery store breaks down, well, how long does your water filter last? Or if the municipal water system stops pumping the water, your filter doesn't work, because all our household filters need the pumping station to pump the water to our house, because there's no electricity to pump that through. So then you would need a, you know, all these things. And then what happens when your filter's all used up after a year of living off grid? So these springs, a lot of them have so much water. The spring that we go to, I had a farmer tell me once, there's a pond beside this spring where it's tapped. And he said he sucked out 1,000 liters, which is, I don't know in gallons, but 1,000 liters in 3 minutes, and the pond went down an inch. So you're thinking like, this thing is literally like a fire hose shooting out of the ground.
Totally.
Yeah.
So imagine how much water that can provide to your community, your family. And I mentioned this yesterday, was picture the generational wealth. You know, you pass on the Bugatti or the mansion or the, you know,
spring.
The 10,000 acres, but now you go with your child to that spring and they're going to bring their grandchildren to that spring. Not only that, if, you know, if tough times ever befall you, your community, your loved ones, you've got this clean water source for an infinite amount of time.
Yep.
That's like real generational wealth is
absolutely,
you know, like we do all these survival things, but sometimes we forget about the things that God or nature, or like great spirit, the universe has already provided to us. And it's so abundant that, yeah, like you could have all the filters, the Berkey, the backup, your life straw, and like, we have all those things too, don't get us wrong, but like we have a water source that's so abundant, we could have a village feed from that every single day for like till the end of time.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, that's amazing. That's pretty cool. I mean,
I would just add in that course too. So Jeff talks a lot about the spring water, and then I teach more on the side of drinking wild water. So again, when I hiked the Pacific Crest Trail, I filtered probably, you know, less than 10 water sources the entire time. I never got sick from the water that I drank. The sources I filtered were because there was either too much human shit or animal shit nearby. And I learned a lot about how to, yeah, drink, you know, what we call wild water, whether that's from a lake or from a stream. And when I was at Teaching Drum on that experience, we didn't have, well, actually we started with life straws and then we transitioned to wild water. So I was literally, we didn't have cups. So we had to get onto our bellies by the edge of this lake and just drink right from the edge of the lake. And yeah, I learned how to do that in a way, again, that you don't get sick. This was not like a pristine mountain fed lake. Like, you know, what I was drinking on the PCT, they were very beautiful, untouched landscapes. This was just like your average lake where beavers do live in. And, you know, you can see the animal life, the creatures in the water. And so I teach the kind of wild water side.
Wow, that's amazing. I'm just looking at you got just the landing page for your course is just filled with information here. So you guys, everybody go check it out. It's findingpolaris.org. If you click on the e-courses and then you click on explore the course, like it just pulls up this like just wealth of information here. Like this alone is a good resource. But then, you know, obviously taking the course, you're going to learn all this stuff and then some. So amazing. Amazing. And easy water, exclusion zone water. What the heck is this? I guess you guys have to take the course. There's a little bit of information there, but man, I love that. It's so cool. So I guess if we're kind of winding down here, like I know we talked a little bit before the show as well about the idea of building community. And like, you know, we met through the whole Bertaria community, which, you know, as we all know, like community is where our true strength comes from, right? Like nobody can do any of this stuff alone. Like during 2020, I didn't know much about, I mean, I knew all the conspiracies, 9/11, like all that stuff. But like a lot of this, I just hit like warp speed. Like, no, I guess that's a bad reference, but I hit like, I hit my ground running when it came to a lot of this, the medical stuff and the health stuff and just exponential growth. But like, as the world was going crazy out in Oregon, my first instinct was I had to find the other people that felt the same way as me. I knew COVID immediately from the get go. Something wasn't right. Like we were not being told the whole truth. This is going to lead to more tyranny. And I needed to find the other people in my life. This is before I got involved with the bear community. I got involved in like, I would say, oh God, I don't know, like summer, spring of 2021. But you know, so during 2020, we got involved with a group called the Freedom Cells, Freedom Cells Movement, freedomcells.org. Big shout out to them, Derek Bros and John Bush and those, and all the folks involved with them. But, you know, we basically just started our own little freedom cell in Eugene, Oregon, which is where I was at. And people came out of the woodworks and it was just such an amazing thing that happened. Like we had like hundreds of people. We did like a festival, like all this stuff. And I really, that was my instinct though. It's like needing to find community, right? That was like the first thing. And so I've held on to that is the solution to whatever befalls us, whatever troubles come down the road. Like the solution is finding like-minded people, you know, that feel the same way you do, like all have different skills, talents, things that they bring to the table. Like that to me, like carries forward in like almost everything I do. Like I'm really involved in the Bertaria community here in Tennessee. And it's just like, to me, it's just like something that's just, and then, Make Americans Free Again is another group I got involved with Dr. Pam Popper. Like we do meetups every other Tuesday night. Like that is where the strength is within community. So you guys want to tell me about your guys' community building and kind of what community means to you then?
Yeah. So I think something I'd like to echo is what you said is everyone has different skills. So especially something we like to do a lot is in our plant walks or different activities that we do. We do a lot of free events because we want to not only put ourselves out there and give as much value as we can for free to our local community. because, you know, there's a lot of bigger cities further from us, but to get people for a day or just a taste, it's a lot harder, and they want to come for the bigger things. But building that locally, and, you know, hey, has anyone recognized this plant? You know, don't say anything. Just, you know, anyone know this plant? And then usually there's always one person who knows at least one thing that we're talking about. And then getting all these people together, because like you said, someone, we meet a lot of people, they have the hunting skill. We don't, we're learning. Like we're just picking that up. And then finding all these people who are like-minded, but also are growth-minded. And they're looking to spread their awareness, whether it's the plants or it's the survival skills, or some people want to have the rite of passage and be challenged. But all these people are searching for something. And then us being able to provide it is bringing value to our community. And I think a lesson that we learned, we lived on a, I guess, semi-remote island here in Ontario. It's a pretty popular vacation spot. It's the world's largest freshwater island, Manitoulin Island. And it had a population of about 14,000 people, but spread out in, you know, take 2-3 hours to drive across the island.
Wow. Yeah.
And, you know, we met a lot of great people and had a lot of friends, but the downside was a lot of the alternative folks that we had befriended were all spread out. So not having community close to you, when we knew like, okay, like this is it for sure, forever, we want kids, this is the North Star we're looking toward, this is where we're aiming our compass. A lot of questions came up, like, there was no, like, I do a lot of martial arts. Been getting into jiu-jitsu. I've done Muay Thai for, geez, I think it's almost been 10 years.
Wow.
There was no martial arts gyms there. There was no gymnastic gyms. There was no, Daria did a lot of dance in high school. There's no dance studios. There's no, so there wasn't a lot of community things there for families. And then you meet cool families, but they live 2 hours away. And it's like, hey, can we get together? It's like, oh, my goats, my chickens. And it's like, cool, we're all homesteading, we're all living off grid, and we're doing the thing, like the thing that we think is right, because that's kind of like what's been pushed on it. Like, get out of the system, get off grid, get away from the man, all this stuff. But then it's like, now you're isolated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're alone. There's no one to help you. And it's like, oh, I'm sick. It's like, well, Bob lives 3 hours away and he can't help you with his goats, you know, like. So that was a huge wake up call for us of like, no, we need to be near our families, whether or not, like, you know, everyone gets along. It's like, no, we need to be near our people and more people, because living remotely like we did, like, shined a lot of light on what I think a lot of us do is run away from things instead of running toward. And I think we learned this in advertising recently is, when you're, you know, people are marketing, you either want them to run away from something and sell them that, or they want to run towards something, you want to sell them that. And I think a lot less people are selling the community piece and the building tribes. And just, it's really amazing to hear all these groups you're able to join and build that community of like-minded people.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you guys do a membership program here as well, looks like. So it's like exclusive podcast. Oh, look at you guys, you're in the podcast game. I love it. So
people go on there, the membership's free for the first month, so if they want to go on to the membership, they'll get it free for the first month, and then all the e-courses are in there, they can access them for free. So if they they want to try the e-courses out, because we sell them for $33 Canadian, that's like $2 American.
Nice. Yeah, exactly. That's
$5 Canadian. So that's like 2 cents American. So feel free to support. But yeah, so like if they want to, you know, just binge watch the e-course, they can do that. Like all the power, we're trying to give them away for free as much as we can.
Wow.
Because it's about, you know, sharing that knowledge and getting people involved.
That's awesome. So $5 a month, you guys, membership gets you the free access to the courses. Wow. That's crazy. Okay, cool.
No. So there's no cost barrier right now to any of the courses or any of the media we've been doing.
That's amazing. You guys, all right, everybody listening, what are you doing? Go subscribe, go follow. What are you thinking? So speaking of follow, tell us like where else they can follow you guys. I know you guys, you have a pretty, awesome Instagram, looks like. That's pretty cool.
We've been putting a lot of effort into the Instagram lately, trying to build that up. And then once we kind of figure that out, we're hoping to go and work our way around the social medias.
If you want to laugh, our first viral video is me talking about how I wipe my ass with snow.
Oh, okay. Was that this one?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. I don't know. I don't have audio with the way I'm screen sharing, but okay.
I give the details of the specific shape so that you don't touch your fingers don't touch your butt.
Yeah, nice.
Apparently the internet loved it. So
apparently the internet loved it, dude. I love that. That's so hilarious. Good job, you guys. Good job, you guys. Yeah, man, I just love everything you're doing. That's so cool. So awesome. Yeah, so
I think I just want to tell everyone, no one falls into this, and I think we're all innately drawn to nature. If you're not, there's probably something wrong with you. But just pick one thing. And we talk about this with plants all the time, is if you want to start foraging plants, just pick one thing. Start with one thing. Go out there, ID it. You know, maybe you nibble on it. Maybe you don't. Maybe you just watch it. But just start with one thing and move on from there, because it can be really overwhelming. You know, so even if it's a skill or it's walking barefoot or grounding, just like start with one thing that gets you into nature and kind of like brings your energy and vibration into unison with nature, and just start with that one thing and then build from there. Don't think you have to like do a million things. It's like anything else. Just start like little baby steps, get out there and just work your way up.
Beautiful. I love that, man. As with most things in life, like you can't do it all at once or at the same time. So just start slow and then just kind of build from there. Yeah, totally. Well, you guys, thank you so much for coming on. I just absolutely love it. Everybody out there, check out findingpolaris.org. Is that this the main website? You can find links to everything else there. Go check out the membership, e-courses. And if you're in the area, if you're in the Ontario area, you guys should go pop in and do some actual real life stuff. So, well, sweet, you guys. Thanks again. Maybe we'll see you in Missouri Labor Day weekend. I don't know. That'd be kind of fun. But otherwise, just keep doing what you're doing. And yeah, I'll catch the rest of you all next week. So, all right, guys. Thank you.
Right on. Thanks for having us.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. And.